So hopefully, while I've been making the announcement, you've been thinking about what are your questions? I mean, either questions about Dharma, questions about practice in terms of understanding, but even more important is how do we apply these teachings? Again, the Buddha said, I teach one thing, the cessation of suffering, right? Which implies a cessation of suffering means a cultivation of all that is good and wholesome. You know, this is why we call it path of healing and transformation. Everything is very clear, very obvious, very practical, and yet and yet many of us stay stuck, right? Week after week, month after month, year after year, some decade after decade. So this is an opportunity to share whatever questions you have about the Dharma, about the practice, and about your application of the practice. And again, even though these may be your own individual kind of questions, because there are many people online and some in the hall, we all kind of share a lot of the same the same challenges. So, you know, it may be your question, but it's oftentimes the question of most of the people online. So sometimes we ask our questions not only for our own benefit, but for the benefit of others. So people in the hall will just, well, we don't need a mic, right? So people in the hall, just raise your hand. Okay, so Jacqueline will do something very tricky when I call on you. And then people in the hall, people online would chat them in.
They could try.
Or you could raise your hand. If you look at the bottom of your screen, if you bring your cursor down the bottom of the screen, you'll see something called raise hand. So you raise your hand and you'll be called upon, just like class. Okay, so extra credit for anybody, for those who begin. I know it's always a little hard, but please, those in the hall, just ask a question, and those online, just raise your hand.
I'll go for extra credit.
Okay, David's first.
So I think one thing that happens in my practice is I get lazy. And I don't really need to sit today.
One second. Do I need to repeat the question?
Yes.
Yeah. So David's saying one thing he notices that he gets lazy. And he could be the only one who has that issue.
So how do I get back on track?
So
I
lazy.
Find that inertia
So
is really easy to break.
laziness, inertia, right. So again, please remember that, you know, we come to the Dharma. We want to heal, we want to transform, we want a fresh start. Is that true? You know? And we've read, it all makes sense to us, we hear the teachings, we meet the teacher, it's all right? It's all perfect. I'm ready to go. And then who do we run into? We run into our habitual self. I mean, there's no way around it, right? We run into ourself because that's who we are. That's the way we've been thinking, that's the way we've been talking, that's the way we've been relating, that's the way we've been feeling for, you know, most of our life, right? So when these things come up, right, such as like you're saying, torpor. You know, in Buddhism, I mean, if you read thousands of years ago and they talk about, you know, what are some of the biggest impediments for meditators, it's torpor and excitement. You know, on the one hand, we're just kind of lazy and dull and blah, blah, blah. And the other hand, we're kind of excited and stimulated. But both of them, you know, get in the way of what we're trying to cultivate. Right. So they both need to be dealt with so we can, you know, I always say, you know, we want to be long distance runners, right? You know, sprinters, you know, they only, you know, go a short distance and then they get tired, right? So we don't want to be people who, you know, ramp up our practice. I'm really going to practice, really going to knuckle down, and then, you know. And then we have to kind of get ourselves working. So we want to, you know, find a, you know, like a long distance runner, we want to find that pace. Okay. Now what is going to You know, so again, all right. So on the one hand, I would probably say, David, this is not the, is this the first time in your life that you were fine, that you all of a sudden, you kind of, whatever you've been involved in, you kind of get, you move into lethargy, or you kind of lose interest, or things get a little dull, or... It's not the first time. So again, so we know that this is patterns, right? And there's no reason that we wouldn't bring this pattern to this aspect of our life, because we are mostly, unfortunately, conditioned beings, which means we are conditioned by our past. You know, and the more we have done something in our past, whatever that is. You know, the more we've done it, the more intense it's been, the more it's been part of our life, it's going to come up with that same level of intensity and rapidity and et cetera. I mean, there's no way around that. But that's good, okay? Because we call our practice the practice of transformation, right? What are we going to, you know, we have to have something to transform. I mean, where are we going to transform, in some alternative universe, right, where everything is beautiful and perfect? No, we're going to transform in the reality of who we are right now. So the process of transformation occurs only in the present. So you find your lazy, or you're losing interest, your mind's kind of dull. So now, great opportunity, if you see it correctly, you realize everything that arises in your mind is only arising because of past causes and conditions. I mean, this is all that's going on. It's not me. It's like the weather, right? Okay, I was planning to go to the beach today, and it's rainy. Yeah, it's cloudy. All right. What am I going to do?
Something else,
right? You know. So laziness is one habitual. So, you know, not everybody has that one. Other people have the other one. They have another one. So let's say yours is laziness and torpor. You have that. Now, what is an antidote? You know, what fires you up? What energizes you? You see, you know, traditionally in Buddhism, for practitioners, serious practitioners, contemplating impermanence and death usually helps. You know, it's like, oh, you know, I mean, like, I'm not going to last forever, right? I don't know how long I'm going to live. I don't know if I have cancer inside me. I mean, I don't know anything. You know, all I know is what? Right now I'm alive and I have this opportunity. Do I want to waste it? So this is a way of talking to ourselves. We also need to remind ourselves often, you know, well, why did I get into this? You know, why am I practicing meditation? Why am I practicing Dharma? You know, a lot of times we have to kind of remind ourselves. We have to kind of go back and touch those places which brought us originally to the practice. You know, so to kind of enthuse ourselves, right? We need to remind ourselves of the fruits of the practice, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel. I mean, you know, in Buddhism, we talk about patience endurance. It's a wonderful term. It means, you know, a lot of times life, you know, we have to go through things. Anybody ever go to school? It was all just happiness and stimulation. I mean, it was just a, you know, what gets you through?
Right?
Yeah, you know you can finish up. I mean, it sounds crude, but I mean, you see, you know why you're doing it. And that keeps you energized. You see, that keeps you going. So, I mean, there's lots of times in our lives where we know we need to do something, or we know something's good for us, but there's something, things that pull us away. Hey, why don't you come out? You don't need to study tonight. Let's go out and, you know, do whatever we do when we're 22. You know, it's like, and all of a sudden one day you go, no, 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 because I wanna, you know, there's something I'm doing here. Right? So we all have that ability. Right? But it has to be that there's clarity about why I'm walking the path, what are the fruits of the path, what are the obstacles that'll get in my way, and how can I transform when these obstacles come up. So you really see it as a, you know, as an opportunity. Is that clear? Your laser is an opportunity. I mean, if you just give into it, we're just feeding the beast. We're just feeding the beast. We go, you know, it's like embrace, yeah, I'm lazy. All I want to do is blah, 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 you know. Now, again, if you're tired or you're just, I mean, we're human beings too. So there's a difference between kind of being tired and just want to kind of kick back for a little bit and being lazy. I mean, lazy is, you know, the opportunity's there, the time is there. You know, there's a part of us that just doesn't buy into the program, you see. Mm-hmm. You see, we have, maybe that's another way of looking at it. Right? So, you know, there's a part of us kind of goes, yeah, I want to change things about my life. You know, I want to, you know, be a different kind of person. I want to show up differently in the world, right? You know, and I'm excited, I'm enthused about that. And I joined this community and it's all, you know. But then there's that other person inside you, you know, who I'm talking about, right? And he or she works from a very different agenda, right? You know, they may not be into this, right? You see, they, you know, the party goes, you know, I'm not into all this. I'd much rather do it the way I always did it. And they forget, you see, we forget why we've come here. That somehow, at a certain point, we knew that way of life didn't work. That those kind of pleasures, you know, don't give us real happiness. You know, that there's something more there's something more for us. And then we, you know, start walking the path and we forget why we came here. And all of a sudden, the old stuff we used to do, which we kind of reached a point where we realized, this, you know, we get sick of it or weary of it, or we know it doesn't go anywhere, all of a sudden that starts looking attractive to us. So at some point you want to get beyond that, where you just kind of get it. You know, I know what's meaningful, I know what's meaningless. I know what real happiness is, peace of mind, and I know what this, you know, the kind of happiness I get from pleasure, you know, I can tell the difference. Is that helpful?
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you, David. And who will be next? Question online? Yes, Jenica. Well, they shouldn't. Yeah, so the question is, you know, sort of aspirations for one's professional career or life, you know, is taking me down one street, and yet I feel that my practice is antithetical, or, well, it shouldn't be. Okay. If anything, you know, our practice should what? Should enrich our life, right? So we are not, I mean, it's, again, we have to be very clear. The Buddha taught to two major audiences. And it's very important when we read the original Buddhist teachings or read the lives of the masters and their teachings that we understand there are different audiences. When they were speaking to monks and nuns, people who have renounced the world, right? Renounced, you know, worldly pleasures, they're celibate, they don't have families, they don't have possessions, they don't have jobs, you know. That's one audience. But when the Buddha and the masters teach to lay people, that's a different audience, you see, and the teachings are different. So we have to be very clear that from the point of view of people like us, we are lay people, we are householders, we're people in the world, And we practice engaged Buddhism, which means our Buddhism is a practice that's totally engaged in our life. So, you know, we can be on a career path. You can have professional aspirations, right? You know, you can want to increase your capacity, be more quality, you know, performance in whatever you do. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, you know, being the best human being you can be, right? But where do we get screwed up? Because we attach, we grasp, we hold on to, right? We make it something bigger than it is, right? We play different roles in life. Maybe that's another way to do it. We play different roles in life. You know? Whatever our work is, that's one role, right? So we put on whatever our career, whatever our work is, and we put on that, and we do the best we can, you know? We're just, you know, quality, present. But then we have other aspects to our life. We have relationships. We have our own personal work of healing and transformation. We know that's important too. So we can be, I mean, our, you know, if you're talking about practices, transformation of our stuff, where does our stuff come up? Our stuff comes up in daily life. Our stuff comes up in our relationships. So what better place to transform than in the realm of work, in the realm of relationships, in the realm of family, in the realm of just being who we are. So practice, quote unquote, practice should make whatever we do in life better. Because we don't do it with so much attachment, so much grasping, so much aversion. We're more open, we're more relaxed, we're more at ease, right? We are doing our best, but we know that we don't control everything. Right? We don't control everything. Lots of variables out there. So we just, you know, we just are responsible for ourselves. But we you know, approach the world of work, we approach the world of people, colleagues, with openness, with friendship, right? With caring, with compassion. I mean, we are who we are. I mean, we can practice all those things at work, right? With our family, or, you know, it's, you know, lay life gives us wonderful opportunities to develop ourselves. That's our practice. If you think, you know, well, I got my, you know, meditation practice over here, I got my spiritual practice over here, and over here is my life. Can you, you know, can you see what's wrong with that? I was, last night, I met with the people on retreat who was asking them questions, and somebody was asking something, and I said, yeah, this is the crazy thing about a lot of people, you know, who are on spiritual paths. When you get together with these people, they tell you about how their practice is going. You know, they're it's all about the practice. But to me, it's all about life. Like, yeah, you can be doing great. You know, you're a great meditator, you're a great visualization, you got great concentration, you know, but your life is still a mess. Like, so what about if this doesn't transform this, if this doesn't carry over to this, then we're like bifurcated individuals, you see. And so we want our spiritual life and our personal life, our work life, to be one whole. You see, many of us, we don't feel whole. We feel like we're in pieces. I'm one way here with this person, and I'm one way here with this person, and I'm one way here when I'm over here, and I'm up, you see? Now, those are roles we play. Right? But the you, that can always be the same. In different times, you use different parts of yourself. But you can always be yourself, can't you? Yeah, we want to be authentically who we are. You know, it's like an actor. You know, that's a wonderful example. You know, a wonderful actor. You always know when somebody's a wonderful actor, because you don't you don't think of them or who they really are. You go, they take you in because they're so authentic in what they're playing, right? You really think they are that person. And yet, I assure you, they're just acting, right? And when the director says cut, they're just themselves again. They don't continue with the act, right? Because they know they're themselves. It's like you go to the theater, when the play's over, they go back to the dressing room and they become, that's not a problem, is it? So that's the way we need to be. Sometimes, we emphasize certain parts of ourselves at work or at a family reunion but we always know who we are. It's always just using parts of ourselves. Thank you, Jenica. I hope that was helpful. Who will be next? Somebody in the hall? Yes.
I was actually thinking of the opposite direction.
Okay.
The first question was more overstimulation and excitability in the mind when it comes to quieting it.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, so the question is the opposite of David's, which is less about the torpor and the dullness. It's more about the excitability, right? And, I'm glad you both are raising the question because these are the poles. And in our culture these days, that's the problem. I mean, I think the real problem is the stimulation. So that's, I think, pervasive, right? Why is that? It's very simple, because the nature of modern life is endless stimulation. Right? If you think about our ancestors, you go back a couple of generations, pre-electronics, pre-TV, pre-radios, pre-phones, you don't have to go back too many generations, right? There wasn't this constant stimulation, right, of the mind. There was more gaps, there was more quiet, there was more, just people working in the fields or working in the factory. I mean, it was, so the mind wasn't being stimulated. But now, if we're not careful, right, we can keep our mind stimulated. Not just from work. I mean, it's enough for many of us that our work has become more and more cerebral, right? But we are what? We wake up in the morning and what? First thing we do is what? What?
Open our eyes.
Yeah, open your eyes. But I mean, we. So, but we often check our what? Check our phone, right? And so, there it is. You're off and running. Right. We haven't come into the day in any kind of relaxed way, right? So even though we may not be going to work for a couple of hours, already we are stimulating. And so, the fact that when all of a sudden you come to meditate and you'd like to quiet your mind, what do you find?
A little tricky.
Because it's overstimulated. It's just running, right? And again, I mean, the problem is we run it from first thing in the morning to the end of night. Right? We're just endlessly stimulating. So, to look to meditation to be the panacea for that, I think is unrealistic. We're just setting ourselves up for failure and frustration. Okay, so. I think we have to look to where the problem is. And the problem is primarily this overstimulation. Right? So I think it's very important that we begin to, find the cause and do some remediation there. I mean, I think we need to have boundaries. Like, I don't check my phone first thing in the morning. I have my routine. I get up. I do what I need to do, I make my tea or coffee, I, meditate, go for a walk, do things that nourish me and that I can be present to life, right, without stimulation. Right? And then, you know, then we go to work, right? Do we, during the day, build in pauses? Very important. Build in pauses, right? 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, lunchtime. You know, do we build in pauses during the day where we just kind of slow it down? Because if we don't, it just builds up during the day, right? I mean, look how many people have sleep disorders. Right? People can't sleep. It's crazy. You know, why can't they sleep, so many people? Stimulation, stimulation. Get up in the night, just, you know, the thing's just cooking. You know what I'm talking about. I mean, but can you see? So meditation is calming, you see. But we can't have unrealistic expectations. You know, if the car is running at 80 miles an hour and you apply the brake, and if the car is running at 20 miles an hour and you apply the brake, right, it's going to stop much quicker when you're going 20 or 30 or 40 or 50 than when you're going 80. Right? So don't fault the brake. Fault the speeder. Is that clear? So I only say this, what is your name?
Felicia,
you know, just to give, so we have to be realistic. Now, fortunately, in our kind of meditation, it's not about stopping thoughts. See, this is what we want, right? Whew. I would just love to have 20 minutes of just no thought, right? Seems like heaven. But it's, the thing's running. So this is why we don't get into trying to forcefully stop the energy of thought. Right? What we want to do is shift our focus away from our thoughts so they're not in the foreground. That is why we go into our bodies. That is why we go into our breath. Right? We're shifting our attention away from our thinking process. And then you notice, Felicia, we have a problem. We're addicted to our thoughts, right? You know, it's like an alcoholic who says, I'm not gonna drink anymore, but, you know, spends his evenings in the bar. You know what I mean? It's like a setup for, right? Because, okay, so. It's like that. You say, "Yeah, I'm just not going to attend to my thoughts anymore. I'm just going to focus on this." But the mind is used to attending, right? Used to paying attention to our thoughts. That's why we have to incorporate in our practice to know that our practice is the practice of being mindful when our mind has strayed, and bring it back. That's the practice. See, the practice is not having a mind with no thoughts. The practice is learning to let go of thoughts. So if you have to let go of your getting caught in a thought 100 times in a meditation center, in a meditation period, maybe I'm exaggerating a little bit, you know what I'd say? That's mindfulness. You see, our practice is mindfulness. Our practice is not stopping thoughts. So if you're aware of what's going on in your mind, right, and you're aware that you've gotten caught, and then you take action, you remember, oh, I'm trying to learn to kind of let go, and you do that. And you do that over and over again. You're strengthening that muscle of mindfulness. That's what you want to do. Okay? Not stop thought. Not stop emotions. But stop our attachment and our obsessive involvement in them. Why is that important? See, so we're learning that on the cushion, right, as we practice. Now, why is that important when we go about our day? Why do you think having that skill is important, Felicia? Yeah. Do you ever find during the day, what do you do during the day?
Well, one of my business is online.
Okay.
So having that boundary of having to put myself out there for people.
Yeah, so Felicia says she's online, part of her business, one of her businesses is online.
Getting revenue, getting income depends on a lot of online.
A lot of online stuff, okay. Now, do you ever find during the day that you get caught in emotions, you get caught in thoughts, you get caught in little dramas within Felicia's mind?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So, this is where we practice. See, this is where that practice pays off for you, because you're aware, oh, I'm just caught in a thought. I'm caught in a drama. Just let it go. Come back. Come back into your body. Come back into your breath. Even when you're on the phone. You can do that. Right. So it's a skill that is very beneficial. You know, we can learn it, you know, on the cushion, so to speak, but we can practice it in our daily life. So is that clear? I mean, this is important. I mean, people make this mistake. We think it's about stopping thoughts. It's never going to happen. You know, I mean, I'll take that back. If you go on a long retreat, 30, 60, 90 days, a couple of years, live in a cave, yeah, you can get to a place of having no thought. Okay, but that's not us. We want to be able to have here's another way of looking at it, okay? We are cultivating a calm mind. The mind can be calm even if there are thoughts going through it. Like you take the sky. All kinds of things can fly through it. Birds can fly through it. Jet planes can fly through it. Right. Is the sky concerned? No. Sky just lets it all move through. It's calm. A hurricane can move through the sky, right? Thunder and lightning and all kinds of stuff, right? Next morning, how's the sky? Blue, everything's good. So ideally, our mind can be like that. So our mind can be calm. Our mind can be at ease. Our mind can be relaxed. And these things can arise in it and pass because we let them come and go. We don't let them disturb us. I mean, that's after a number of years, okay? Mm-hmm. So does this answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Anybody online?
Yes.
Yeah.
So question asked, as I walk down the street and see strangers, I continuously have judgments that I make without really getting to know them.
Yeah.
From their appearance.
Mm-hmm. It's what? So it's, they said it's very powerful?
Right. It feels almost insurmountable, that feeling of just the natural inclination to make judgments of others.
Mm-hmm. And I would imagine these judgments are more on the negative side than the positive, like, look at that wonderful being walking down the street there. See, it's interesting. We wouldn't have a problem with that, would we? You see, but it's this negative mind, right? This critical mind. Yeah. Well, I think, you know, first thing is please remember that other person is probably looking at you, judging you. So that's, you know, a lot of people talk these days about biases and all this kind of stuff. Everybody has biases. We cannot grow up without being biased, you know, unless we grew up with some kind of special world, you know. Everybody has biases, everybody has opinions, everybody has prejudices of one kind or another, right? This is, unfortunately, this is just given, right? So, it's sort of like with what we're just talking about, thoughts. We don't have to give power to these thoughts. If the thoughts arise and we don't act on them, we don't believe they're true, their ability to have power over us is really negated. You know, we all, like where we started today, we all have been conditioned. Our minds have been conditioned. You know, we came into this life, no language, we were babies. We just were aware, you know, that very simple. But we've been conditioned. We grew up in a certain, we grew up in a family, an extended family, a culture, a religion. We went to school, we had neighbors and friends, and we have society and all its stuff, and right? And so we end up, our mind, it gets conditioned. The way we see things, you know, the way we were taught to see things, not see things, the way we were, you know, judged, this is right, this is wrong, these are good people, these are bad people, this, you know what I mean? Right? That's just what happens. And then one day you wake up and you say to yourself, this is not healthy. You look at your mind and go, oh, it's got, like this person, it's just full of judgments. It cannot walk down the street without judging this one and this one and this one and this one. Right? So you're becoming aware of your mind and what's going on inside it. So again, the one thing is, it just is what it is. If we learn to let it be, if we learn to let it go, if we learn not to act on it, then it has very little power to affect us. We can just know, yeah, this is just my conditioned mind, blah, blah, blah. You know, blah, 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 blah. It doesn't have to bother me, does it? You know, my conditioned mind is going blah, 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 blah. Look at that one, look at that one. You don't have to jump on its bandwagon. You can just be in the background doing blah, blah, blah. So that's the beginning, right? You know, don't, if you're upset by it, then you're already engaged with it. You see, you're already letting it affect you. I would say, just acknowledge that we have this conditioned mind. It's used to responding, reacting. You're not even planning it, right? It just does it. It does it by itself. It's not even your mind. It just does it. Okay. Blah, 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 blah. It's like walking down the street and the people in front of you are having a conversation. You know, you don't have to pay any attention to it or give it any credence, do you? No. So you got to realize, the stuff that goes on in our mind is just like that. It's just running on its own. Now, it's running on its own because of its conditioning, because of its past, the things we began with earlier today. But we decide, oh, I would like to have a mind that was not so judgmental, not so negative, that was, you know, sort of thought more positively about human beings. Good. So now we're talking about change. Now we're talking about transformation. So, when you see another human being walking down the street, and this is sort of directed to the person, but everybody else can listen, you know, is how would you like your mind to be? See, how would you like your mind to be? Yeah. See, in Buddhism, we practice metta, Pali. We practice Maitri. We cultivate a friendly mind, a caring mind. So, what's that based on? It's based on the idea that everyone is just like me. All human beings are basically the same. Doesn't matter any, you know, all the ways that in our world we just separate from each other, discriminate ourselves from one another. This is this, this is that, I'm a this, you're a that. If you got rid of all that craziness, you're left with a very simple fact. All human beings want to be happy. All human beings don't want to suffer. That cuts through everything. All human beings would like their family, their loved ones, to be happy, right? All human beings would like their family, their loved ones, their friends, not to suffer. And we can just extrapolate that. So that's what unites us. So when we see another human being, to see another human being, you know, the way we see a human being where we judge them, we're seeing them very superficially. And we basically don't even know them. We're just making, it's like we're projecting out. We don't even know this person, right? And we project out something about them, right? Based on our criteria, you know, like we're the, you know, we're the big shots in this world. As I say, they're all doing the same thing to me because in their world, they're running the show, you see? So it's everybody's doing this. But now you go, yeah, I want a healthier mind. I want a more loving, open mind. So all beings are the same. They want to be happy. They don't want to suffer. So as soon as you are aware that your critical mind is aroused, but even better, we can practice as we walk about the world, seeing human beings, work wherever, to think to ourselves, may this person be happy. May they be free of suffering. Just try that. May they be safe. You know, when you're shopping in Publix and the people are checking you out and the bag, you know, it's like, may you be happy. May you be safe. May you be free of suffering. May all your family members be happy, free of suffering. So we are now kind of changing this mind of ours, you know, putting in new ways of thinking, new ways of relating. And over time, if we stop feeding, you know, the old way, give it any credence, and we really cultivate this new way of having more kind thoughts and loving thoughts and friendly thoughts to everyone, you will see that mind will decrease in its power. That's it. Yes, sir. In the hall.
So recently, I feel like I've been stuck in like a cycle. And I just wanted some advice on that. Like,
okay, I gotta repeat to people, they can't hear. So the gentleman's saying he's kind of been stuck in a cycle, okay. If I understand, you're saying, yeah, we cycle through the same stuff. Went through something a number of years ago, wasn't a pleasant experience. Sort of facing the same kind of thing now, and I don't want to make the same mistakes. Yeah. Welcome to the club. What is your name?
Cedric.
Cedric, yeah. Welcome to the club, Cedric. But that's good. I mean, just the fact that you're where you just said you are, which is, you're kind of beginning to wake up, you see. You know, most people in this world, they just keep going through the same stuff, right? Same stuff, same behavior, even if it's not working. They just keep doing it, right? And they just stay stuck in these patterns. Even if it only produces unhappiness for them, right? They stay stuck. So the fact that you're going, yeah, you're kind of stepping back and going, whatever's going on now, you're going, something familiar about all this. All right. So We cannot redo the past, but we can learn from it. So to go through suffering, to go through difficulty, that just happens. But not to learn from it so we can do it differently, you know, that's on us. Okay? Okay. So, you know, you want to reflect back. You're like, here it is again. Okay, so maybe you reflect back to the last time. You know, what got me caught in that? What mistakes did I make? You know, what did I misjudge? What did I not pay attention to? Okay. And then you come back to this one. And you go, what's going on? What's the cause? If I asked you, Cedric, without getting into personal stuff, like, what's the cause of this situation, do you think? What do you think you need to learn, my friend?
I'm not sure. It's really like I'm finding a similarity in like with my job or even relationships. It's just like a couple like those things in my life right now are very similar to where they were before. Like I'm just finding like that it's happening. It's like repetitive.
All right, and it's not. So he's saying work, relationships,
yeah.
Same old, same old.
It's like
same issue. All right. Yeah. So what's going on? So, you know, first thing is we start with ourselves. See, our usual mode is to blame. Right? So, you know, the difference, way we do it here, Cedric's new, is we first look to ourselves. You know, we give up the blame game. Why am I doing it? Because of him, because of her, because of them, right? I mean, that could all be true, but that still doesn't get me, you know, the problem is mine, right? So I want to see, what am I doing? What am I doing that's creating this situation? You see? Which really then puts it on me. You know, what am I doing? What choices am I making? What way am I responding? What am I not doing? What am I not listening to? What am I not, you know, what am I not hearing? So, you seem to kind of get it that life is trying to tell you something, right? Are you listening? See, I think there's a part of us that knows what the problem is. But we often don't stop long enough to just listen to that part of us and ask that kind of question. You know, what's really going on here? Here it is again. I'm suffering. Maybe I'm causing suffering, right? I don't want to do that. I got to find another way. I can't keep doing it the same way. Cedric, that's what we're all doing here, finding another way. But, you know, the fact that you get to a place where you go, you know, this isn't working, right? I mean, it's like, that's great. I mean, it sounds, you know, it's like, sometimes we just have to admit, you know, I don't know what to do. You know, it's like sometimes we go, you know, I've tried all my tricks. They don't work, you see. And this is hard for many of us. It's like, you know, maybe I need some help. You know, maybe I need help from somebody outside the situation, you know, because I can't see outside my own self. So Cedric's just saying, and we got to stop, is, I kind of make decisions like that I think I'm supposed to make because of maybe other people's expectations or whatever, and it just doesn't work. That's important, you know. You know, in Buddhism, it's kind of simple. The Buddha taught there's suffering, there's cause of suffering, there's the end of suffering. So we said we begin, something's not working, some suffering in some aspect of my life. What do I do? Look to the cause. That's where I go. Not the solution. Because if I don't know what the cause is, my solution may not solve the problem at all. Right. So I stop and I go, what's causing this problem at work, in relationship? You know, what's the cause of it? When I really get to the cause of it, then it's kind of simple. If I just eradicate that bad cause, I won't have the problem. Right? But discovering what that causes, sometimes the cause is me. You know, it's hard to admit sometimes. Sometimes the cause is me. The way I'm going about things, my attitude, my, you know, right? My holding on to things, my trying to force my will on, you know what I'm saying? You know, sometimes the problem's me. I'm the cause of the suffering. Sometimes, you know, but sometimes it's 50-50. Right? But, you know, and how do we learn to work skillfully with situations? I mean, so this takes time. But, you know, it's hard for us in this culture to be willing to stop. You know, just to stop and say, whatever I'm doing, it's not working. Okay? But I don't know what to do, right? That's a good time to stop. You know, it's like driving somewhere and you realize, not only am I lost, right? You know, not only am I on the wrong road, but I'm not sure how to get back on the right road. Now, do you keep driving? No, you stop. Right? And you regroup and you know, and you kind of, yeah, let me, I got to stop. So that stopping and learning to look deeply is very important. Thank you, Cedric. We have time for one more. Yes.
Well, like, might take longer than one more. As a parent, how any suggestions on how to approach discussions of sex with the kids in view of digital stimulation?
Well, so these are very interesting things. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, the Dharma doesn't have a lot to say on this. So, you know, I'd probably end up talking. What? Oh, the question is about talking to sex with my children.
In light of the digital,
in light of the digital world. Yes. Oh, I see. In the digital world. Yeah, so in this life, we exist in a culture, in a society. We don't exist, you know, islands. We don't exist alone. We exist in a culture, a society. You know, its attitudes, its mores, you know, and everything else. As well as, you know, we have this other issue, which is so much is accessible through this little device here that I'm talking about. So much is, the whole world is accessible. Everything that is wholesome is accessible. Everything that is unwholesome is accessible. Right? From that point of view, it is a very frightening, like it's, but it's just, because it's just all available. And even adults have trouble navigating it, as we know. I mean, you know, there seems to be this proclivity that the human mind has. It just goes to what it's not supposed to go to. You know, we just kind of love that stuff. You know, so it's kind of, and again, it's so easy. It's so easy. And it can be so private, you know. It's just you and your computer, my best friend. It can take me anywhere I want to go. And nobody needs to know. I mean, it's... You know, whether it's politics, social views, I mean, the whole thing is just, right. And so again, right, I think I read this a number of years ago where maybe it's changed, but like at a certain point, the highest utilization of the internet was for pornography. I don't know if that's still the case because it's such a proliferation, but yeah, so there it is. Okay. And so you have children. So it's really about two things, right? How does one moderate, put limits and boundaries on their use of a device that opens up the whole world, the whole adult world, not just the child's world, the whole adult world to a child. Right? I mean, this is something traditionally parents wanted to protect their children from, right, entering the adult world too early. So now it's changed. Yeah. So I think it is forcing parents in many ways to have conversations that they probably wouldn't have had for years. Right. You know, I always believe, you know, in Buddhism we teach appropriateness and skillfulness. So in any discussion with anybody about anything, we're always coming from a place of how can I be of help? What would be helpful here? So that's generic. How could, you know? So I'm always coming from a place, how, you know, what can be helpful there? But then to be of help to anybody, it has to be appropriate for the person. So the age of the person, you know, where they're at, it has to be appropriate for them and their world. So you have to know your children and their world and the kind of messages and everything that they're being received, just like we need to. And then, you know, how can I be skillful? How can I be authentic and how can I be skillful? I mean, I'm not going to give anybody answers because I'm sure there's lots of information out there for parents about how to approach all these things. But I think you know, some people, just like their lives, they want to create a bubble around themselves. And I can understand that. There's lots of toxicity in our culture. So it's very understandable that we'd want to create a bubble around ourselves. But my sense is, you know, this is the world. This is the world that we've inherited. This is the world that is. And it really relies on each of us to find the strength and the clarity to navigate through this world in the best way we can. Doing the most good, doing the least harm. I mean, I think that's the challenge for all of us. You know, I think having a spiritual life, having an inner life, makes that easier. One, because you are coming from a place of authenticity in terms of your values, in terms of how you want to live in this life, how you want to show up in this life. That's very clear to you. See, that's something that we always have control over. So I think that's the strength of having an inner life, of kind of knowing who you are and how you want to be in life. I think the mindfulness and the meditation is very helpful for that because it makes us aware of what's going on inside us. It makes us aware, we know when we're coming from an authentic place and we know when we're not coming from an authentic place. You know, we know where this is really coming from something that's really true to me, and this is where I'm really, you know, doing something to please others or to, you know, make us, you know, get people to think a certain way about me. You know, all this kind of external stuff. I think the practice gives us over time an inner strength and an inner confidence to be ourselves and to be our best selves, and not be so concerned about what other people think about us. Right? So again, I think, what do I think? Yeah, I think we are living in difficult times. You know, as we know, I don't need to enumerate all the difficulties and challenges that face our world, but also I think just being a human being in this world these days, with so much instability and so many different kind of forces and so much negativity. I think it's forcing us, I'm talking about all of us, it's forcing us to raise our game, right? It's forcing us to raise our game. We just have to be, as I say, clearer, stronger, more centered, more grounded in our own truth about life, so we can navigate. We don't need to hide. We don't need to be afraid of life. We don't need to be afraid of people. We don't even have to be afraid of negative situations, because we have this ability, right, to go through them and transform them with our own understanding, our own love, our own compassion. So, you know, these are the times, my friends. So thank you. It's been a wide-ranging discussion this morning. I hope this has been helpful. So we'll end here. Thank you.